Today, yay, central banks will save us. The Property Imperative Weekly to the 8th of February 2020. Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our latest post covering finance and prop news with a distinctively Australian flavour. In today's digest, despite the virus fears, markets remain bullish, though supply chain disruptions are in play. US jobs were strongish, while in Australia, the RBA is optimistic about the local economy, despite the headwinds. As usual, we'll start with the international news, but if you want to go directly to the Australian segment, the time code is shown below. In New York on Friday, equities extended losses later in the day as renewed concerns the coronavirus will slow global growth overshadowed fresh signs of a strong labour market, while treasuries jumped. After a fall on Monday, the S&P 500 index halted a four-day rally but remained on track for its best week since June as automakers and other industrial companies led losses. The latest job report showed hiring stayed robust last month, bolstering optimism growth can persist. The US created 225,000 jobs, well above the consensus forecast of 160,000, pointing to underlying strength in the economy. The unemployment rate was expected to stay at 3.5%, but it rose to 3.6%, and most worrying, wage growth missed expectations. It had fallen under 3% in December, but bounced back just a little to 3.1% in January. The number of unemployed persons at 5.9 million changed little in January, and the employment-to-population ratio rose to 61.2%. Meanwhile, the presidents of China and the US reaffirmed their commitment to the implementation of a Phase 1 trade deal in a phone call on Friday. And confirmation that China will cut tariffs on $75 billion worth in US goods also signaled that the trade war is at least at a truce for now, which will help US jobs ahead. However, the markets reacted to the Federal Reserve warning that the coronavirus outbreak posed, quote, a new risk to the economy, contained in its monetary policy report, which was released on Friday, ahead of Jerome Powell's appearance before Congress next week. They said the recent emergence of the coronavirus, however, could lead to disruptions in China that spill over to the rest of the global economy. And indeed, the fallout for companies is starting to come into focus, with corporations such as Toyota and Honda temporarily halting operations in China. Apple's iPhone maker Foxconn told employees not to return to work when China's extended break ends on Monday, and Hyundai stopped production because of supply chain issues. Major US airlines have halted flights to China, and consumer brands, including Nike, have warned that the coronavirus is taking its toll as stores remain shut. With global growth expected to take a hit, Caterpillar, a bellwether of global economic activity, fell more than 2.8%, pushing materials deeper into the red. But even with the potential fallout, the Fed says that the likelihood of a US recession occurring over the next year has dramatically reduced in recent months, despite the growing uncertainty. The coronavirus has infected more than 31,000 individuals and killed at least 636. Since the outbreak, Wall Street has fretted that the virus's impact on global growth would spill over into the global market. These fears, however, have been eased somewhat by expectations that central banks will act to stem any economic wobble. They will save us once again. But some on Wall Street appear less optimistic. The new coronavirus outbreak abroad has created new risks in the near-term external growth backdrop, but there is little apparent reason for monetary policymakers to consider rate cuts at the moment, and we continue to expect the Fed to sit on the sidelines through 2020, RBC said in a note. And Michael O'Rourke, chief market strategist at a brokerage firm Jones Trading, noted markets have shot higher despite uncertainty over how long travel restrictions and shutdowns will weigh on large portions of China's economy. Easy monetary policy from the US Federal Reserve has made investors bolder about taking risks, he said. Every time there's been a downturn in the market, the Fed has stepped in to ease, he said. Investors have been trained in a Pavlovian manner to not assess risk and buy every dip you get. The Fed also said that in the second half of January, investors' concerns about the implications of the coronavirus outbreak for the economic outlook weighed on Treasury yields and led to a flattening of the yield curve, as well as some increase in uncertainty about near-term Treasury yields. Since the middle of last year, Treasury yields ended lower on net. The 30-year dropped 3.3% to 2.044%. The 10-year Treasury yield slumped 3.69% to 1.583%, and the 3-month was down 0.48% to 1.565%. So the curve remains inverted, a signal of potential trouble ahead. Now, it's worth noting, too, that the Fed said that inflation moved back below 2% last year, where it had been for most of the time since the end of the most recent recession, so still not meeting the target band. Core inflation picked up after the first quarter and was at an average annual rate of 1.9% over the remainder of the year, so lower for longer. And I hope Congress asks Powell about efforts by the Federal Reserve to prop up the markets for short-term funding of the banks during their 2 days of review. Elsewhere, Uber Technologies surged 10% as the company said it would turn out a profit earlier than expected. The positive outcome came after the company reported quarterly results that topped Wall Street estimates. The Dow Jones Index closed at 29,102, down 0.94%. The S&P 500 was down 0.54% to 3,327, and the Nasdaq was down 0.54% to 9,520. But the Dow and the S&P had their best weeks in 8 months. The Volatility Index has been much more agitated recently and was up to 15.47, though down from earlier in the week. And we expect volatility to continue, something, of course, which traders will love. The US dollar was stronger, no surprise there, as the dollar rises when there is a risk aversion. So the move is consistent with a sell-off in stocks, with the US dollar yuan up 0.46% to 6.907, the euro US dollar down 0.33% to 1.0943, and the US Aussie dollar down 0.78% to 66.78. Australia's dollar dropped to its lowest level in a decade, with the fallout from the coronavirus hurting risky assets. So gains in the Australian dollar, a liquidity proxy for China because of the heavy exposure of Australian exports, were likewise halted. The trade-weighted US dollar index rose 0.2% to 98.70. West Texas Intermediate crude fell 1% to 50.41, driven lower by the expected fall in demand as a result of the virus, and is down more than 15% over the past month. Although it is quite difficult at this stage to assess the possible implications, according to Goldman Sachs, the virus could lower oil demand by up to 260,000 barrels per day if it impacts passenger traffic due to travel restrictions. Gold landed at $1,573, up 0.25%, and continues to be perceived as a place of safety in times of uncertainty. Bitcoin continues its volatile run, up to $9,730 on Friday, which is up 35% so far this year and 828% over 3 years. Equities pushed lower across most of Asia as news of further infections on a cruise ship off Japan offered another reminder that cases remain on the rise. Singapore boosted its disease response to the second highest level, the same one that they used for the SARS epidemic. And confirmed cases worldwide have now risen to 31,432, having risen by more than 3,000 in each day, while the death toll reached 638. Much is unknown about the coronavirus, including its lethality and transmission routes. The World Health Organization has said it is too early to call a peak in the outbreak. The rate of infection is not slowing, said Michael McCarthy, chief market strategist at brokerage CMC Markets in Sydney. I'm a little surprised at the way European and US investors have shrugged this off. I think the reaction in the Asia-Pacific region is much more reasonable. There is real uncertainty, he said. Certainly the spread of the virus continues apace, leaving epidemiologists worried that it is yet to reach its peak over the next 2 months. After a $400 billion wipeout on Monday, Shanghai is poised for its worst week in 8 months. The index closed at 2,875 on Friday, but the other Asian indices were ahead, and the pan-European FT Euro First is heading for its best week since late 2016. The People's Bank of China said it is closely monitoring the economic impact of the virus outbreak, but that the central bank has many policy tools to offset the pressure. Vice President Pan Guoxing told a news briefing on Friday that China's economy could be disrupted in the first quarter, but it expected to recover once the virus is brought under control. And they've already taken a number of measures via open market operations, injected liquidity into the economy in the past few days, and there is more, much more they can and will do. China has sent a very strong message that they will do whatever it takes to stabilize its market and economy. So once again, the central bank will save us. And it's been underpinned by China's sweeping efforts to contain the spread of the virus. But with deaths rising, cities shut off, flights cancelled and factories closed, global supply chains are in disarray, and fears of a pandemic remain high. More worryingly, China decided to delay the release of its January trade data, which was due out on Friday, and will instead publish them together with its February numbers. The coronavirus lockdown started on 23rd of January, just a day before the country was about to close down for Chinese New Year. And the move could be an attempt to obscure the real impact of the virus even before it becomes fully public. European Central Bank Governor Christine Lagarde has reinforced expectations that the central bank's ultra-loose monetary measures will remain in place at least until the year end. Moderate growth performance is delaying the pass-through from wage increases to prices, and inflation developments remain subdued, Lagarde said. The euro area economy, therefore, continues to require support from our monetary policy, so more action from the central banks. Investors shrugged off disappointing German data, which showed that the slump in manufacturing was far from over. Factory orders in Europe's largest economy unexpectedly fell 2.1% month on month in December, well short of the expected 0.7% growth. On a yearly basis, new orders slid 8.7% against a 6% fall in November. Orders are considered a key gauge as they indicate future output. And Deutsche Bank is likely to increase bonuses for its asset management segment by as much as 10%, despite reporting net losses in 2019, Bloomberg said. The higher bonus pool is reflective of increased profits and assets in the segment. Notably, asset management was the only core division to report solid rises in net revenues. Also, it was successful in recording net inflows in the year. Shares of Deutsche Bank gained more than 13% on Thursday on investor optimism over the news that US money management firm Capital Group has bought a 3.1% stake in the German lender. This is a serious vote of confidence in the bank as it heads into a sweeping transformation process, which will see it focus on more traditional commercial banking, as well as cutting 18,000 jobs in a bid to halt the long-term share price decline. Despite various strategies to strengthen financial performance, Deutsche Bank's profitability is threatened by its involvement in persistent legal hassles and low-rate environments in the domestic economy. Also, litigation issues related to past misconducts and related costs might hamper bottom-line growth, but shares of the company have gained 26.6% over the past year against a 4.6% decline recorded by the overall industry, and it closed at 9.44. Hi, it's Liz Interruption, but if you're getting value from this post and have not done so, please consider subscribing to this channel or ring the bell for custom alerts. Plus, please consider supporting our efforts. You can make a one-off donation via PayPal, here's the link, or subscribe via Patreon for as little as $3 US a month or more to get access to exclusive additional content. Alternatively, you can also donate using Bitcoin. Here is the QR code. The links are in the comments below. I really appreciate your support, which enables us to continue to make more great content. Thanks very much. Now, back to the current show. And so, to the local news. The Australian dollar fell against its US counterpart after the Reserve Bank of Australia cut its 2020 growth forecast amid the outbreak of the coronavirus and recent bushfires. In the statement on monetary policy released on Friday morning, the RBA slashed the June 2020 GDP growth forecast to 1.9% from 2.6% previously, while the December forecast was trimmed to 2.7% from 2.8%. Looking further ahead, it raised both the June and December 2021 forecasts to 3.1% from 3%. The coronavirus could shave 0.2 percentage points off Australia's economic growth in the current quarter, with its spillover effects seen larger than the 2003 SARS outbreak, Philip Lowe said in testimony to Parliament on Friday. Our $2 trillion Aussie dollar economy could take a hit in the tourism and education sectors. It is still too early to tell, but the impact is going to be large, he said in Canberra. If the virus persists for an extended period, the effect on economic activity is likely to be larger than currently projected, he added. As tourist numbers slide and consumer spending slows, analysts at ANZ Banking Group see the economy shrinking in the March quarter, the first contraction since 2011. And Fitch Ratings said that if the impact from the virus is short-lived, we do not expect credit profiles to be materially affected. However, if the outbreak is not sufficiently contained by the first quarter 20, more corporate issues will face ratings pressures. In a separate statement, rating agency Moody's said Australian universities face the greatest immediate credit risk due to their high concentration of Chinese students, their proximity to affected regions, and the fact that the outbreak coincides with the start of their academic year. And UBS downgraded quarter four real consumption to 0.3% over the quarter and 1.1% over the year, well below the RBA's November forecast of 1.4%, although low indicated closer to 1%. They trimmed their quarter four GDP growth to 0.5% and 2.1% over the year compared with the RBA's 2.3%. Indeed, with the hit from the bushfires and the coronavirus, they slashed their first quarter GDP to 0.2% and 1.8% over the year, with downside risk if the coronavirus issue is not resolved. For 2020, they have long been below consensus, and so they revised down to 1.9% over the year, compared with 2.1%, while consensus has fallen from 2.4% until recently towards 2%. For 2021, they stick with 2.5%, which is similar to consensus. In contrast, the RBA just reiterated an optimistic view of 2.75% in 2020 and booming 3% in 2021. But as growth disappoints, the RBA and unemployment ticks up, they expect a 25 basis point cut in April and in August, with the latter still conditional on global central bank easing and no material fiscal stimulus. But AMP's Capital Chief Economist Shane Oliver is not as sanguine. He told ABC PM that the double whammy of the bushfires and the coronavirus have significantly increased the risk of Australia entering a recession within the 2020 financial year. Indeed, Dr. Oliver said it is conceivable Australia may be there already. It's certainly possible that we're in recession, he warned. The RBA governor noted the balance of risks on easing could shift according to how the economy performed. If the unemployment rate would have been moving materially higher and there was no further progress being made towards the inflation target, the balance of arguments would tilt towards a further easing of monetary policy, he wrote in the Outlook. But he also concedes that strong home price growth or lending could cramp his style. And you can watch our show on the RBA policy line, The RBA Lands Sunny Side Up, and also our own version of monetary policy, DFA's statement on monetary policy. And by the way, the New Zealand dollar fell in sympathy as investors look forward to similar cautious comments from the Reserve Bank of New Zealand later next week. And the latest AIG Performance of Services Index, the PSI, for January fell by 1.3 points to 47.4 points, and that is the second month of decline for Australia's services industries. Results below 50 signal a contraction. On property, the CoreLogic Index continued to track higher, seemingly disconnected from reality. Growth continues in the major markets, though the rate of growth is continuing to slow, and the latest auction results on very low volumes and the first after the break reported a slightly lower overall clearance of 61%. But we'll have to watch trends in future weeks as the supply of property on the market is now rising. And CoreLogic has released alarming research showing that there are no affordable houses in either Sydney or Melbourne. While the median property value provides a useful reference point for the typical home value in an area, buyers on a tight budget might find it more practical to narrow down their property search by examining lower quartile values. The lower quartile, or the most affordable 25% of properties in a region, provides a better view of the market entry point, while the upper quartile, the most expensive 25% of property, gives an indication about premium values. It's just that there are no affordable properties in reach within our major urban centres. And Australian regulators will consider intervening to stop banks from automatically directing tap-and-go card payments through the world's largest payment processors of Visa and MasterCard, the central bank has said last Wednesday. Banks must stop automatically directing debit card payments through the two global networks and instead give retailers the cheaper option to use local network FPOST, Philip Lowe, the governor at the Reserve Bank, told reporters. Regulating here is not the preferred option, but it is a fallback option if we don't see the required change, he said after a speech in Sydney. One of the possible reasons for the major banks dragging their feet on what's called least cost routing is that they have each very extensive relationships with the large international schemes. We will be exploring this in the review, Tony Richards, the head of payment policy at the RBA, was quoted as saying in the Australian Financial Review on Wednesday. And as we face into the reporting season, damage from months-long bushfires will dominate Australian corporate earnings results this month as companies give their first profit updates since the start of the summer and as a coronavirus outbreak in China adds uncertainty to forecasts. Insurers such as Suncorp and Insurance Group Australia that are paying out claims related to the country's worst bushfires in a generation will be hardest hit, fund managers and analysts have said. Retailers and companies that depend on discretionary consumer spending are expected to report a tough quarter as well. Earnings from a clutch of such companies include retail conglomerate Wesfarmers is likely to decline 1.6% on an average for the 6 months ending 31st of December. And companies exposed to Chinese tourism and spending, including casinos, educators and dairy producers, may flag early impacts from the virus. Qantas may take a double hit as bushfires gutted domestic tourism over its busiest period while it was forced to cancel flights to mainland China from February the 9th to March the 29th, potentially hitting its earnings outlook. Many companies have already flagged potential losses from the bushfires, which have claimed 33 lives and destroyed over 2,500 homes, and the fire season still has another month to run, and analysts are expecting more losses. And Australia's biggest banks, struggling in a low credit environment and dragged down by hefty customer compensation bills following mis-selling scandals, are expected to again report weak figures. Expect low interest rates, poor and deteriorating housing affordability, and high valuation by global standards to continue to make banks an unappetizing investment, with the four biggest banks expected to report a 10% decline in profit for the first half of fiscal 2020 from the same period a year earlier. And Australia's federal court has ordered wealth manager AMP to pay a penalty of $5.2 million for failing to prevent incorrect insurance advice by financial planners, ASIC said. This penalty proceeding reflects a lamentable failure of corporate will to take the necessary steps to prevent greedy and unlawful contact, the court said in its judgment, which also faulted the firm's lack of a swift and proper remedial response. AMP was down 1.41% on Friday to 1.745. The ASX closed at 5,823, down 0.37%. The financials index was down 0.19% to 6,260, and the local volatility index was up 1.21% to 1,356. The gold Aussie cross was up 1.03% to 2,351, while the Aussie Bitcoin cross was down 0.97%, 14,662. So it comes down to the market's confidence that the central bank's rabbit can continue to be pulled from the hat, with more liquidity being poured into the markets to support weak underlying economic performance, thus driving asset prices higher. And yes, they can continue this approach, which may protect the financial system. However, this should not be an end in itself. Rather, ordinary people, not the few rich percent, should be benefiting, and frankly, they are not at the moment. And before I close, I wanted to highlight an article in The Edge today by David Crowe on the cash ban, titled "Antithetical to Our Liberal Principles, MPs Move to Prevent $10,000 Cash Ban." A political backlash is threatening to halt a Morrison government plan to outlaw cash payments over $10,000 in a fight over the cost for consumers and companies of forcing a shift to electronic transactions. Ministers are facing a torrent of criticism from Liberal and National MPs, as well as party members, who believe the crackdown on cash is a breach of the government's stated belief in the free market. Assistant Treasurer Michael Sukkar has privately criticised the plan to his Liberal colleagues out of frustration that he inherited the proposal from the last term of Parliament. The divisions set up a clash in the Senate that could veto the bill unless the government acts on demands from its own MPs to abandon the reform or send it back to department officials for extensive changes. In my view, there is a sense among party members, and I think Liberal voters, that on this bill, the party is not staying true to its Liberal values, Victorian Liberal member Steve Holland said. I'd like to see the legislation withdrawn because, in my view, it is antithetical to our Liberal principles. Mr. Holland, a web developer, secured a vote from hundreds of Liberal members opposing the reform at the party's Victorian State Council, triggering a letter to Treasurer Josh Frydenberg to respond to the concerns by February the 17th. The minister in charge of the bill, Assistant Treasurer Michael Sukkar, has privately criticised the plans to his Liberal colleagues out of frustration that he inherited the proposal from the last term of Parliament. I know there is a deep disquiet across the government on the merits of this bill, one Liberal MP who declined to be named said on Friday. There's just no enthusiasm for it at all. While the Australian Tax Office wants to stamp out the black economy by curbing large cash payments, critics said the cost would be far greater than the benefits if Australians were banned from using more than $10,000 in cash. Those speaking up against the bill include the Housing Industry Association, New South Wales Farmers, the Australian Dental Association, and big retail groups that say customers like to save cash to make big payments. It is unclear what evidence exists to illustrate that limiting cash transactions to $10,000 will prevent tax avoidance and illegal activities, New South Wales Farmers told the Treasurer last year. And Flight Centre backs the change in principle, but said some of its customers like to pay for holidays with cash after putting money away for months or years. Our ability to track transactions to meet the requirements of this regulation is a concern for us, Flight Centre Risk Manager Brett Anderson told a Senate inquiry on January 30th. Treasury official Patrick Boneham told the Senate hearing of cases including a biker gang that used $1.5 million in cash to buy 10 luxury cars so they could be sold to launder money. An economist, John Adams, a former government official and advisor to Liberal ministers on deregulation, said the policy was at odds with the government's own rhetoric. This policy is completely consistent with the thinking about how to deregulate an economy and promote not only economic freedom, but robust economic outcomes, Mr. Adams told the Senate hearing. Coalition MPs, including Russell Broadbent, Barnaby Joyce, George Christensen and Patrick Cogan, spoke against the bill in a party room meeting last September, and the government is playing for time to reconsider the plan, moving on Thursday night in the Senate to postpone a report on the bill until February the 28th. Labour Senators Kimberly Kitching and Jenny McAllister have challenged the Treasury over the change, given there is no formal regulation impact statement to quantify the costs and benefits. And Labour voted for the bill in the lower house, but is yet to decide its final position after the Senate review, raising the prospect of a defeat for the government if it proceeds. Centre Alliance Senator Rex Patrick said the benefits of the cash ban were not clear, but the problems were including the likelihood that criminals would get around the restrictions while law-abiding Australians were inconvenienced. The balance, he said, lies against supporting the bill. Now, we'll keep pushing on this for the next 2 or 3 weeks. And I just want to acknowledge that there are a number of people who watched our shows who've picked up the phone and made their voice heard to the senators. This has been a very important part of the program. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. And thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.